Hi, I'm Bill Arnold. According to what I've just been told, here's the podcast for the Early Morning Late Show. Enjoy our conversations.
Hey, good morning. Thanks for tuning in to the Early Morning Late Show. I'm Neil Stavem, sitting in for Bill. He's off this week. Glad to be a part of your Tuesday morning. Hope you are doing well. Waking up at oh dark 30. It's cold. Rebecca, it's like it's cold everywhere. It's
a little unfortunate, but I feel like I signed up for this, so I can't
okay.
really complain.
All right. Well,
I just have to put on my many layers of armor or under armor, as the case may be.
What's they say? There's no bad weather, just bad clothing.
That's probably appropriate, actually.
I don't know if I believe that. But, you know, I just wear the long underwear all year long, and that's fine. So
I'm glad that works for you.
Not well, but family's not too pleased. But oh boy, Hartford getting it again. They're looking at 5 to 7 inches of snow in the greater Hartford area this afternoon and tomorrow. That's after they had a warm-up the other day and then started a little flooding. And so, and it's, you know, we had black ice around the parts of the upper Midwest and snow and cold. And, yeah, they're talking about the wind chills, like 9 degrees in Birmingham, I think.
I just don't know what to expect. I mean, the weather in itself is a test of faith.
It's called winter. So I think that's, you know, I mean, I know that there's a lot of confusion about that, but it's, yeah, it is.
Go ahead. Burst my bubble, Neil.
All right. It's just winter.
Still hoping for spring.
Okay. Yes.
I live in hope.
That's right. Well, this is a place where we get, is it faith, hope, and love? No, it's
faith, hope, and clarity.
There we go. Well, and we'll throw a little love in there as well.
Sure. We love you.
Speaking of love, how about some love on the Vikings, huh? I know you didn't, watch it moment by moment.
No, I was paying attention to the scores. I was actually getting my hair done at the time. But that sounds way too stereotypical, so I didn't want to admit that on the air.
people were pulling out their hair going, oh, no, here it goes again. 25 seconds left, and you think, all right, this is, Minnesota has just gone down to another sad defeat. And then the absolutely improbable walk-off touchdown. It was amazing. It reminded me of that old call from Jack Buck.
I don't believe what I just saw.
Yeah, that's pretty much how I think his son Joe during the game said he had chills. So not quite the same enthusiasm as his dad called the game. But wow, what a afterwards, after the game, Minnesota quarterback Case Keenum stunned the Saints, of course, with that last-second touchdown. And he said there, you know, of course, the microphone in his face right away, this is probably going down as the third best moment of my life, he said, behind giving my life to Jesus Christ and marrying my wife. So, way to go, Case.
I love that.
Yeah, former undrafted free agent. But, you know, we're not going to forget Case Keenum. And hopefully we're not going to waste the miracle in Minneapolis, as they're calling it, and can get one more outing here in Philly next week and bring it back home for the Super Bowl. So that would be great. Well, we've got a super show today coming up a little bit later. We're going to visit with Dan Darling and learn about an event going on this week in Washington, D.C. And this is also a National Religious Freedom Day, and we'll talk about that and other news with Jarrett Stepman from the Daily Signal. That's all coming up in a moment. Some years ago, had an interim pastor at our church, and he would always close his message with Psalm 19, verse 14. And I thought we'd just offer that today. Psalm 19, verse 14 says, "May the words of my mouth and the meditations of my heart be pleasing to you, O Lord, my rock and my redeemer." And as we think about what's in the news today and how we react to it, it would be worth us just reflecting on that. May the words of my mouth and the meditation of my heart be pleasing in your sight, O Lord, my rock and my redeemer. It's 8 past the hour. It's the Early Morning Late Show.
And I look not for riches or praises on earth. Only you'll be the first of my heart. For this is what
All right, 10 after the hour already on a Tuesday morning, the Early Morning Late Show. I'm Neil Stavem, sitting in for Bill Arnold, and we're going to head to the nation's capital to get an update on the news with Jared Stepman. Jared's editor for the Daily Signal, the news arm of the Heritage Foundation. I always appreciate the guys from the Daily Signal coming on the morning show. Jared, good to talk with you. Thanks for joining us this morning.
Well, thank you so much for having me on.
Happy Tuesday. And are you a football fan? So should we do a segment talking, your predictions for championship games this weekend?
Well, I am a football fan. I'm originally from Oakland, California, and a little bit of a fan of the Raiders, but they didn't sniff the playoffs this year, as they haven't much in the last couple decades. They've been pretty good last year, but they didn't sniff it this year. But I am very happy to see what the Vikings accomplished and Case Keenum. It really is, it shows why football is such a fun sport when you have moments like that. And as somebody who is rooted for some long-suffering franchises, I have to say it kind of warms my heart to see a team kind of break through like that.
Well, Jacksonville, too, had a pretty surprising win. So anyway, it'll be a fun weekend. Long suffering. We're maybe, I don't know if the word is suffering, but certainly these are challenging times for the president, the administration, and we're going to jump in and talk about that sort of nagging issue of the Russia investigation. It just doesn't seem to go away. And now maybe Robert Mueller is going to say we need to have a talk with the president. Give us an update.
Yeah, so this is looking like it's a possibility. Now, of course, when there is a kind of special investigation of the president, things like that, the president is very careful when he has a one-on-one conversation with a special investigator. So this is not like a little chat. This is something that the president will be very much prepared for, certainly by his lawyers. And it's something they've negotiated with Mueller's team to make sure that, A, one, that he can submit answers beforehand, and B, that he's well-prepped ahead of time. So this is kind of an unusual situation where you have a special prosecutor speaking one-on-one to the president. We saw this in the 1990s when President Bill Clinton spoke to Ken Starr, a special prosecutor at that time. So these are very much regimented affairs. They're not open-ended question sessions. So it's definitely looking like it's a possibility. I think that's what a lot of people see as end game of the Russia investigations is this conversation. Now, I have to say, at some point, I mean, the investigation itself has now dragged on for over a year, which is something the administration is definitely griped about. And I think the country kind of expects there to be something big to come out of this, if not, the questions will come, when does this thing end? When are we going to start to move on from an investigation that so far hasn't really uncovered a whole lot?
So does there have to be a kind of a gotcha moment here? Or is this, if there's nothing there, then, how does Mueller just pack up and go home finally?
Well, that is a very good question. I think that's what I think the president and his staff are concerned about, is this fishing operation to try to catch Trump in saying something or something along those lines that they're trying to prevent. And to a certain extent, I think there does have to come to an end to this. Now, of course, there's a big demand from certain sections of the country to aggressively go after the president and maybe even to trip up his presidency. But at some point, I think the public is going to become tired of this investigation if nothing surfaces that seems like some kind of smoking gun, that there's been some collusion between the Trump administration, the Trump campaign, and Russia. I think there is going to be at least calls from the public that, maybe we should move on from this, unless, of course, they uncover something big, which we really haven't seen so far.
Talking with Jared Stepman from the Daily Signal. And, Jared, one of the other items that we're talking about in the news these days is Kentucky jumping in on the work requirement for Medicaid recipients. The feds say the states can now make work a requirement. Say more about how that's going to be developing.
Yeah, it's actually a very interesting thing. It was really the first state to jump in on having what is essentially work requirement for Medicaid. Now, work requirements have been used for other programs, like, for instance, SNAP, or what's called food stamps. And they've actually proved to be quite successful. In fact, states like Kansas and Maine have gone through reform and added work requirements, and it's shown to have a lot of benefits, including doing the thing which, you know, we hope, you know, anybody who's getting government aid would eventually get off the program, which it actually has been successful in getting a lot of people off those programs in those states, and having a benefit to the general public. So, and certainly in cost savings. But I think in Kentucky, Governor Matt Bevin has definitely, because Kentucky has been one of these states that has expanded Medicaid under Obamacare, is looking for ways not only to cut costs for the state, which have, of course, ballooned during the time, but also get people off Medicaid. And I think that work requirements have shown in other cases to be a successful method to do that. So I think there are a lot of other states that are really looking for this right now because they are seeing increased costs. They are seeing this kind of problem. And we do ultimately, at the end of the day, want to prevent dependency on government if it can be avoided.
Talking about some of the issues in the news today, there is a day recognized today as National Religious Freedom Day, and we're going to talk more about that, why that's significant, with Jarrett Stepman. Jarrett's the editor for the Daily Signal, and he's with us today in the Early Morning Late Show. It's 16 past the hour, and we'll take a quick break and come back. Talk religious freedom and more just ahead. Good Tuesday morning to you. It's the Early Morning Late Show. I'm Neil Stavem, sitting in for Bill Arnold today. 19 past the hour, talking today with Jarrett Stepman. Jarrett's editor for the Daily Signal, and talking about news of the day. And well, a lot of the news lately has been about business owners, photographers, bakers, florists, and others being sued, maybe even closing their doors for adhering to their values and beliefs. Talking about the role faith must play in America, Jarrett, today is National Religious Freedom Day. Are we moving in making a change, you think, in how our country is allowing faith in America?
I do think there's definitely been, I will say, a war on religion in the public environment. I think truly one of the great things about America at its conception, really, is that we have this idea of religious liberty, and religion in many ways grew in this country in ways that, you know, if you take a look at the rest of, especially the Western world, where religion has been in retreat, the United States has been a country where, you know, religion has been a bedrock for us. And it's something that I think really defines us as a country, because we do have religious liberty. It's actually grown here to an extent we don't see anywhere else in the world. You know, this is such an important fundamental aspect to who we are as a people, and the right of conscience, the right of being able to believe, essentially, to stick by your beliefs in a public sphere is so important, which is why I think there are many people who should be concerned about what's going on in the public sphere. Of course, the case of Jack Phillips, a baker, which we've covered very extensively at the Daily Signal, the idea that a person can be compelled by the government to essentially go against their religious beliefs is something that really kind of goes to the bedrock of who we are as a people. If the government is able to do that, what role does religion play in the public sphere? How are we able to express our religious beliefs if the government can force us essentially to abandon them? And I think that is a very critical thing. And it's something that, whether one even isn't religious, should be seen as a concerning thing when the government has that kind of power to violate conscience rights and things like this. So I think there is a reason to be fearful, because I think there's been a dramatic change in how this country views religion in public life, certainly from certain sectors, that does threaten our religious liberty. That's been something that's been understood for centuries. It's been in many ways protected by the Constitution and our institutions. That is dramatically changing. So I think people have every reason to be concerned at this time.
We've sort of gone from seeing faith as a positive benefit to a negative now, isn't there? I mean, there's a great concern that there can't be any vestige of that anywhere in the marketplace.
Right, and I think that's what's so concerning. I mean, there's already so many negative pressures you see from the media, from Hollywood, and a lot of our cultural institutions have already begun to attack things like, you know, people who have faith and things like this. It makes it even worse now officially it is difficult to live according to one's faith or to express one's views as a Christian. This is, I think, a very concerning thing. I think it's something new in American history that is a new challenge that, you know, I think people of faith do have to stand strong in this time because, you know, there are a lot of, you know, negative attacks on religion that are coming from all sectors. So, you know, it is a really, I think we're at a critical battle in the faith right now for the right of religious liberty.
Jarrett Stepman with us from the Daily Signal. We've got a couple minutes left. Jarrett, yesterday, of course, Martin Luther King Jr. Day, and the president, of course, has been blasted for his comments, and he had an article recently about young black female conservatives trying to leave their mark on the Republican Party, which I would think would be a bit of a challenge. Say a bit more about what you're seeing.
Well, I as somebody who is a part of the Heritage Foundation, I have to say, you know, some of our strongest leaders have been black women, including the new president of the Heritage Foundation, Mrs. K. Cole James, who has proven to be a leader. She was ahead of the OPM during the George W. Bush presidency. She's a wonderful new president of the Heritage Foundation. She's shown real leadership. And my friend, Miss Virginia Walden Ford, who has been an absolute leader in the school choice movement. As somebody who grew up under segregation, she was one of the Little Rock Nine. She embraced school choice to bring education to a lot of Americans who haven't had access to it over the past, a good education. So, you know, we definitely see at the Heritage Foundation black women who have really, really stood out and been leaders for many and been inspiring stories for us. You know, I think it's a wonderful thing for conservatism, and it definitely speaks well in them.
The Daily Signal is a place to go for updates on the news. It's the news arm of the Heritage Foundation. Jarrett Stepman is an editor for the Daily Signal. Jarrett, it's great to have you back with us here on the Early Morning Late Show, and wish you a great week ahead.
Thank you so much for having me on.
All right, 25 past the hour. You're coming up in a moment, so we'll get a little relief from the news with Ken Davis. He always has something to kind of brighten our day with Lighten Up. A little bit later this hour, we'll talk to Dan Darling about Evangelicals for Life event coming up here starting Thursday in Washington, D.C. It'll be our focus. And we'll also hear some thoughts on forgiveness without limits. We'll get to Jim Garlow. That's all part of the morning show. Still to come here on the Early Morning Late Show. Past the hour, it's the Early Morning Late Show, and maybe you're looking to move some mountains or maybe just make a little adjustment in your health and fitness. I want to encourage you here. I don't know how your New Year's goals are going, but coming up next month, we're part of the Live Free Challenge here on Faith Radio all through the month of February. Hundreds of us are going to be walking, running, riding to raise money for rescue and rehabilitation of trafficking victims. It's the Live Free Challenge, and it's an initiative to support the work of International Justice Mission in freeing children, women, and men from human trafficking. And our goal, with your help, is to sponsor the equivalent of 10 rescue missions in the coming year. It's a great opportunity. You can find out more at livefreechallenge.org. So now's the time to sign up. Decide how much you want to do and to get some friends to come alongside and be a part of the support team with you and encourage you. And together we'll get fit and we'll make a difference in the fight against human trafficking. We also have a link on our website as well, so you can check that out, myfaithradio.com, or go to livefreechallenge.org. But now's the time to sign up. And then through the month of February, we'll see a great work being accomplished on behalf of International Justice Missions, which is, of course, doing great work already. And so we're just coming alongside the support. So check it out. Go to livefreechallenge.org to sign up and get plugged in. Coming up in about 15 minutes or so, we'll talk to Dan Darling. Dan is Vice President of Communications for the Ethics and Religious Liberty Commission. We're going to talk about the Evangelicals for Life event coming up this week in Washington, D.C. That's all ahead on the Early Morning Late Show. Thirty-four past the hour, the Early Morning Late Show, Tuesday edition. I'm Neil Stavem, sitting in for Bill Arnold today. Dick, we're talking about trusting the Lord with all your heart. Good word for the new year, and we're thankful for friends that stand with us and have been part of Faith Radio for many years. Or maybe you're new to Faith Radio. We just say welcome to you. We do have a welcome packet that's available at myfaithradio.com. You can request that. Gives us great information about this ministry. You also listen on the app, the Faith Radio Network app, and all that to say, we just appreciate you, friends, for joining in. We're talking about keeping friendships in midlife. Peter Greer is author and CEO of Hope International and talks a bit about the need everyone has for good friends, and it begins with this amazing statistic.
The average male makes no new significant friendships after age 36. So that time in life when we need friendships most, we find them in incredibly short supply. Women tend to do a little bit better, but that to me says, am I cultivating friendships? We work in multiple contexts around the world, but I had one friend in Africa that said, we have a proverb that says you always have to have four friends. And, you know, the question, why four? Well, four is the number of people that you need to carry a stretcher. You want to make sure at 3 a.m. you've got four friends right around you that can carry your stretcher. And I think that's more than just a literal deal. I think we all need four friends that we could call at any point that are going to come to our aid and our help. And again, the evidence says right when we need friendships most, they're in dwindling supply. One of the applications for me is, am I making time and space during this really busy stage of life to make sure I'm investing in friendships?
Peter Greer has written a great book about midlife, and you can do a search for that whole interview, myfaithradio.com. I look for keeping friendships in midlife. You'll find that with Peter Greer. Well, we're at 37 past the hour, and coming up in a moment, we're going to talk with Dan Darling, author of Activist Faith and More, Vice President of Communications for the Ethics and Religious Liberty Commission. He's guest on the Early Morning Late Show in a minute.
I'm often asked, what's the limit on what I'm supposed to forgive? And my answer is, well, it may surprise you. There's no limit to forgiveness. This is Jim Garlow. When Jesus' disciples asked him that question, he said in Matthew 18:22, 7 times 7 or 7 times 70, do the math. 70 times 7 equals 490. So I'll forgive 490 times and I'm done, right? Nah, doesn't work that way. In Ephesians 4:21, Paul describes it as kind and compassionate, forgiving each other, and be sure you hear the next part, just as in Christ God forgave you. Forgiveness, God's kind of forgiveness, His death on the cross forgiveness, is ongoing, never ending. Now please don't confuse forgiveness with making yourself vulnerable to abuse, not at all. To forgive doesn't mean reinstatement. So what's the limit on what we're supposed to forgive? There's no limit to forgiveness. This is Jim Garlow.
Twenty-two before the hour on Tuesday morning, the Early Morning Late Show underway. And on the line with us today is Dan Darling. Dan's with the Ethics and Religious Liberty Commission. And he's a writer and speaker. He's served as a senior pastor for a number of years and has written several books, including his latest, Activist Faith. We're going to be talking about Evangelicals for Life event coming up. But Dan, welcome to the Early Morning Late Show first. Nice to have you back on.
Neil, thanks for having me on. I hope you're keeping warm there in Minnesota.
You know, we just wear layers. That's what we do. And, it, you know, there's and scarves and earmuffs and, the, you know, the whole bit. But it's a look. It's not a good look, but it is a look anyway. I'm interested in, well, and of course we keep active. And I know the title of your latest book is called Activist Faith. And I know some people maybe react to that a little bit and say, well, that's sort of not my style. Just before we get into talking about the event coming up in D.C., talk a bit about Activist Faith and the your premise for that.
Well, I think a lot of people might think, well, I just don't want to be involved in politics. You know, I just want to preach the gospel. I just want to, you know, be faithful where God has put me. And that's actually a good instinct. I think we forget, though, you know, the gospel is inherently a political statement. It's saying that there's another king and another kingdom that is supersedes all the other rulers and kings of this world. And actually, the gospel, once it works its way into our hearts, we realize that God calls us to live on mission in this world and to represent the kingdom of God by helping to give voice to those who have not given voice. So, for instance, Jesus says to love your neighbor as yourself. And we have to ask ourselves, can I really love my neighbor fully if I don't speak up when they are being targeted? You know, so can I love my unborn neighbor if I have an opportunity as a citizen of this country and to use my influence and my vote to speak up for their welfare? Or can I really say that I love my minority neighbor if I do not speak up for racial justice for them? And you see how this works. Can I really love my neighbor if I don't participate in forming the social structures that affect my neighbor's flourishing? So I really do think there's not a way to divide our faith from activism. It, you know, and God calls different people into different levels of activism. For some, that means running for office and being part of public service. For others, it's just simply being faithful in their local church and speaking out where they can and maybe using their gifts and talents to help those who are less fortunate. There are different levels of ways that we're active, but there's no way to compartmentalize the gospel where it doesn't affect the way we live in the world.
Coming up later this week in Washington, D.C., it's the Evangelicals for Life event. And as you said, it's about giving voice to the voiceless. Just to say a bit more about what this gathering is all about.
Well, we're really excited about this event. This is the fourth annual Evangelicals for Life, and we partner with Focus on the Family. And what we're trying to do is just really awaken evangelicals to really stand up for the sanctity of human life and human dignity, particularly for the unborn, but not just for the unborn. We talk about human life from the womb to the tomb. So anywhere the image of God is being sort of assaulted in somebody. So it could be the unborn. It could also be the way that sometimes we think about the elderly. It could be sometimes the rhetoric that surrounds the, you know, complicated issue of immigration and refugees, you know, really saying that as Christians, we believe that God has created each person in his image. And so every person is worthy of dignity and respect.
There's always, you know, pushback and say, well, you know, Christians, you know, say they're valuing life, but they don't, you know, they don't care for foster kids or whatever it might be. You know, that I mean, you always hear criticism, I guess, but there is some amazing work being done by good-hearted Christians and ministries that are truly making a difference all across the spectrum.
There really is. You know, I mean, much of that criticism that comes from people who are pro-choice, you know, to say you only care about the baby after they're born. Much of that criticism is really unfair. I mean, the pro-life activists that I know as I travel around the country are good-hearted people who not only care about the unborn, but are sponsoring children overseas. They're giving to help alleviate poverty in the communities. They're helping with disaster relief in a variety of ways. And so I think much of that criticism is really unfair. However, I do think, you know, we should at least listen to some of that and say, okay, what are gaps in the way that we think about human dignity? What are the gaps in the way that we think about children? And are there policies sometimes that maybe we support that, you know, don't adequately respect the sanctity of human life for those who are born? And so I think we need to
continually be examining the way that we think about these issues. And I don't think that one of the things we're trying to do is get people who are really rightly care about justice issues, about poverty, about immigration reform, about all these issues, to also to get that tribe also to work with people who are activists for pro-life issues and say that these don't have to be two warring camps, that pro-life, to be pro-life for the unborn is a justice issue, justice for the most vulnerable among us who are discarded, and then to get pro-life people to say that some of these other issues are actually pro-life issues. And so I think if we can get both groups of Christians working together, I think we can accomplish a lot.
We'll talk in a moment about some of the policy changes and maybe social structures that can be changed and the impact we can have as evangelicals gather in Washington, D.C. coming January 18th. We're talking about Evangelicals for Life with Dan Darling. Dan is from the Ethics and Religious Liberties Commission, Vice President of Communications there, and author and speaker, and former pastor with us today on the Early Morning Late Show. It's 15 before the hour, and we'll talk more in just a minute. Helping to get your day started on a Tuesday here, 47 past the hour. And it's the Early Morning Late Show. I'm talking with Dan Darling. Dan's from the Ethics and Religious Liberties Commission. He's a former pastor. He's an author, a writer. He's written books including Activist Faith. And we're talking about Evangelicals for Life event coming up here in Washington, D.C. in just a couple of days. Dan, before we maybe talk a little bit about this event, which has a live stream available, it's something you've been doing with folks in the family here for the past 4 years. Give us a sense of maybe where the pro-life efforts are focusing today, and in terms of policy changes, what do you see maybe positive and what still needs to be done?
You know, I think in terms of positive, I think we're pretty optimistic about just some of the momentum of the pro-life movement. We've seen, first of all, the reduction in the number of abortions every year. I mean, every abortion is tragic. But we're seeing a reduction in that. And I think much of that is due largely to there's a social stigma attached to abortion now that, more and more people are becoming pro-life, including younger and younger generations of people. I think decades of technology have really opened up the womb in a way that people realize and understand that there's a life there. But I also think some really great work has been done, particularly on the state level. As states have passed abortion restrictions that have really worked to reduce the number of abortions. And then we're optimistic about some of the policies of the administration that have slowly worked to reduce abortions, and things like the Mexico City policy and some other conscience protections for pro-life people. We're hoping for more. We're hoping to see a day where Planned Parenthood, which is the largest abortion provider, receives quite a bit of our taxpayer money, is not funded by taxpayer money, and that money could be redistributed to health clinics that are really doing good work on health but not doing abortions. So we're really optimistic about that. In terms of areas for the movement to grow, I think we need to continue to educate people about what abortion is, about to personalize the unborn, to point and say that there's a person here. I also think we need to think through just the way that we use rhetoric and the way who we attach ourselves to in terms of leaders and standard bearers. And I think one of the things that we're trying to do is get pro-life people to think about the sanctity of human life across the spectrum. It's to be pro-life is not is more than caring about the unborn, but it's not less, never less, but it is more than that. And to try to think through, what does it look like to be holistically pro-life when it comes to the way we think about the elderly, about immigrants and refugees, about poverty, about sickness and disease and death and all these things. And so that's an area I think that there's room for growth in the movement.
We're in a time where there's a pretty sharp divides in partisanship. You see the ability of Congress and legislators to work together and to make some progress.
Well, we hope. You know, you're right. We are in a kind of very divided time where people are very tribalized into their own, into our own opinions about the news, opinions about things that we hear going on. We would hope to see that people could work across partisan lines. You know, we long for a day when to be pro-life is not a partisan issue, that that both parties would race to champion the dignity of the unborn. Unfortunately, we're not in that time, but we can pray and work for a day that happens.
Coming up here in a couple of days, the gathering in Washington, D.C., Evangelicals for Life. Say a bit about it, maybe some details where we find more information, and give us a little sense of who's going to be there.
Well, we're really excited about this event. It's Evangelicals for Life. It's this Thursday, Friday, and a part of Saturday in Washington, D.C., and we've done it around the March for Life, which is been going on for 45 years, where thousands of people from around the country march from the Washington Monument up to the Supreme Court building, just to make a statement for the sanctity of human life and tell our public officials that that we think the unborn has personhood and the unborn needs to be protected in life. At our event on Thursday, Friday, and part of Saturday, we're really excited to have some really great speakers like Benjamin Watson, who is a tight end for the Baltimore Ravens, Ann Voskamp, who's an author and speaker, Johnny Erickson Tata, who celebrated 50 years last year of being quadriplegic and her just incredibly inspiring ministry. Russell Moore is speaking, Rich Stearns, president of World Vision, Senator James Lankford from Oklahoma, Senator Ben Sasse from Nebraska are both speaking, and many other speakers. And it's really a time for people to come and not only get equipped in how to think through the range of pro-life issues, but also to get really good, make good friendships and network and figure out how to go back home and really be a champion for life. We have a lot of pregnancy resource center directors who come and are just kind of refreshed and equipped to go back and do some of that kind of work. And so people can still attend. There's still tickets available. If you go to evangelical.life, you can also watch the live stream and just go to evangelical.life and register for the live stream. We'll also be posting some sessions on our Facebook page, the ERLC Facebook page. But it's really a really great event where evangelicals can come together and say, we stand for the dignity of human life. We stand for the value of human life in our country.
Good word. What a great lineup. I mean, with Benjamin Watson and Johnny Todd, Ann Voskamp, Russ Moore, and Rich Stearns. I mean, that's that'll be inspiring and encouraging, I'm sure, for those that attend, and to be able to see it on live stream as well would be great.
Yeah, absolutely. And we're just hoping that we get hundreds, if not thousands, of people just to come to the nation's capital and just really make a statement and say that as a Christian, I believe that every person is created in the image of God, every person has dignity, and as long as I have voice and I have means and I have resources, I'm going to stand up for those who can't stand up for themselves.
I was thinking you'd go to the Capitol and you could hang out there till Saturday, then just run over to Philadelphia for the Vikings game Sunday. It's just a thought.
Yeah, that's a great idea.
Right. Dan, great to talk with you. Dan Darling is from the Ethics and Religious Liberties Commission, talking to us about Evangelicals for Life, the event coming up here Thursday in Washington, D.C., evangelicals.life. is the website to get more information. You can also sign up for the live stream. Dan, blessings to you, and continue to keep up the good work.
Well, thank you, Neil, for having me on. Thank you for the great work that you guys do at My Faith Radio.
All right, it's the Early Morning Late Show. We've got about 5 minutes here before the top of the hour, and we'll do a little wrap-up coming up in just a moment.
It's morning. Your best bet to make it a good one is to listen to the Early Morning Late Show with Bill Arnold on Faith Radio.
Do I love you, oh my, do I?
Oh, great conversations already this morning. Jared Stepman from the Daily Signal giving us some good insight on the news of the day. It's part of what we offer every day here in the Early Morning Late Show, some faith, hope, and clarity about the world in which we live. Dan Darling also talking to us about Evangelicals for Life, that gathering coming up here in Washington, D.C. Yesterday, great show, Rebecca, with several guests. And I know a couple of the guests were talking about the trip they took down south, visit John Perkins, and just get exposed to some of the areas of civil rights concerns.
Yes, it was a fascinating story. Pastor Matthew St. John and Ryan Fair, both of New Hope Church, up here in our area near the Twin Cities, and they've really taken this. They took a group of pastors, both black and white pastors, from this area to on a tour of civil rights notable places and kind of reviewing the history of racial tension in America, and made it very real and had some really powerful moments to share with us. And if people are interested, there's the podcast just from yesterday that's up at myfaithradio.com on the Early Morning Late Show page.
Check it out. That would be great, great listening again. By the way, 14 states announced a joint effort yesterday to preserve sites important to the civil rights movement. They're developing a trail, the first single push to get visitors to take in the civil rights history all across state lines. And that was announced yesterday. 130 attractions across the state announced yesterday, and I think it's a great idea. All right, yesterday, Dr. MLK Day. It was also the day that gospel recording noted singer Edwin Hawkins died at age 74, and he's probably best known for the song that we can enjoy a little bit here as we wrap up the first hour. Edwin Hawkins passed away, author and the singer for Oh Happy Day. All right, great hour coming up next hour. We'll be talking with David Bailey from Erebon, as well as David Aikman.
Thanks for listening to the Early Morning Late Show podcast. These conversations are available because of your prayerful and financial support. Make a gift now at myfaithradio.com. To avoid missing future editions of the Early Morning Late Show, subscribe to the podcast today at iTunes or your podcast player. And thanks for sharing this audio link with a friend, and grow the impact of the Early Morning Late Show.